And of course, Danyon Brinkley with us, and we're going to be talking with Danyon about, of course, his incredible work. Did you know he's a best-selling author? At Peace in the Light, Saved by the Light, The Secrets of the Light. And he'll tell you his story when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Danyon Brinkley with us. Danyon, incredible life you have had, my friend. And I'm glad you're still breathing.
Well, you know what, George, I'm thankful. As I listen to tonight, I'm so very proud because how all this started was growing up as a complete jerk and going through the military and learning a lot about life in those particular periods after the Vietnam era when they were developing what we now call contractors. People are like mercenaries, and you were developing that mindset, and all of us who were adrenaline junkies, we were easy prey for what the intelligence services could find useful tools. And coming through all that and then listening to the night, in 1975 at 7:05 p.m. on a Wednesday afternoon, I was struck by lightning. What I discovered at that moment is that no one ever dies. Doesn't happen. And I was laughing the other day because I was talking to Eben Alexander, the neurosurgeon who wrote Proof of Heaven. And he said, Danyon, he said, what was it like in the early days of when this happened so long ago? Because he's catching all the heck from coming out as a neurosurgeon and having a near-death experience. And I laughed. I said, think about this, Eben. I'm a redneck jerk. And I discovered that there is a world so magnificent and so awesome that I could not comprehend myself as a spiritual being, but nonetheless, there was nothing I could do about it. When that lightning got me, George, I was dead for 28 minutes, completely paralyzed for six days, partially paralyzed for 7 months, 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself. But I don't remember that night except lifting out of my body and watching Sandy and Tommy and then being in the ambulance. So the story up until probably Friday afternoon, from Wednesday night to Friday afternoon, I don't really know it. But I do know that I lifted out of my body, and I became aware of it. And what I was laughing about with Eben, and I said, look, Eben, I never gave a crap whether anybody thought I had a near-death experience. I thought they were funny, and I knew I was going to win the argument no matter what. Sooner or later, everybody's going to realize that what we're talking about. But here's where I was lucky. It was driving me crazy like it probably does a lot of people. Because you have to change so many things, George, about your reality and what you see in your consciousness. And if it had not been that the hospital they took me to, Dr. Raymond Moody, who wrote the landmark book Life After Life.
Great guy.
Yeah, Raymond was a medical student at the medical college. The medical school. And so that's where they brought me, and that's how that friendship developed. Raymond and Paul Perry, and Paul is the co-author of Saved and At Peace. And this is where it all came together. And if I hadn't had Raymond, I wouldn't have made it. But Raymond asked the right questions. And then someone said, well, Danyon, what caused me to come out and stand? George, so many people who before Raymond gave it a name in 1975, of which I am one, had this experience. But they had nowhere to turn. They had no place to go. They had no way to talk to anybody about it. And being around Raymond, because there was just three or four of us, and talking, it was for all the great names in these studies, Bruce Grayson, Michael Sabon, Melvin Morris, Ian Stevenson.
The best of the lot, all of them, all of the huge names in this field.
Yeah, it came from Raymond, and this is before all of them. And I was watching people tell their stories, and the joy and the relief that came on their face when they got to tell a story about something. A near-deather can tell when a near-deather is telling the truth. You know, if you've been through it, you can watch. And the relief that somebody would listen. And so how I became famous, George, is somebody had to defend those people. Somebody had to stand up and who had this thing and had this event and had to stand up and hold the ground for them. And it's how this evolved. This is how I got here. I mean, this is the way it evolved, and this is what I'm all about. So
good for you.
Here's what the whole thing about it is. Nobody's ever going to die. And everything that we've been talking about for the 2 hours in the Twilight Brigade was a plan. I looked at what I saw in the near-death experience, this lifting out of the body going down the tunnel. But you have this thing called the panoramic life review. And then you have what I call the crystal cities, because you have to look up in language, find words that match the experience, because there's very few things that go on over there that you have in very few languages that are colorful and beautiful enough to be able to explain what goes on over there. But everybody has what's called a panoramic life review. This is what you have. You will see your entire life pass before you on a 360-degree panorama. You'll watch it from a second-person point of view, and you will literally become every person that you've ever encountered.
But you didn't like your past life, did you?
Well, I still had to face it. It's a fair and just universe. No, I was a prick. Come on, George. You know, I have still some of those personality traits till this day. You know, we're good friends. I still have some of those traits. I just am doing better. But if you're going to be every person that you ever encounter, and you can feel the direct results of your interaction between you and that person. So I got to see how many times I'd hit myself in the face, how many times that I had caused emotional pain with my personality. And once I realized that, that was the change. That was the place that no matter what I had to do, taking 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself and wet my pants and fall on the ground and break my nose and be passed out and wake up with blood running out of my nose and into my eyes and can't move till somebody comes over. This was the point where I realized that that all had purpose and it had a reason for it. And nothing was going to stop me. And then when I met Raymond, I was going to defend it. But there's a fair and just universe, and everybody's going to be every person they've ever encountered. And when that happened in the beginning, George, it was like there's such disconnect, because now you realize that quantum mechanics has proven we're all connected. We're all in a thing called dark matter and the Higgs boson particle. We're all connected. But the only thing I had back then was gurus in India talking about us, we're all one and we're all connected. But now we know it's a proven thing, and that, so the panoramic life review makes even more sense. And then the fourth part of this is, I use this word, but if God couldn't come today, or if divinity couldn't come today, and divinity sent you, in the life you just lived, what difference did you and divinity make? Well, it was easy to migrate toward hospice, because the difference that I believe that the divine world that we now call the near-death experience or the afterlife or the different dimensions or heaven, whatever name people attach to it, then knowing that system, which now you know I've been through it 3 times, 13 years later I had to have open-heart surgery and had a near-death experience, whereas struck by lightning I had a death experience, and 7 years after that I had brain surgery, and I had a third one of these experiences.
I thought we were going to lose you right around then.
It's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Hey, Daniel, we've got your brother on the line, by the way. Your brother, Jimmy.
Fabulous.
This sounds like one of those TV shows. But let's bring Jimmy in. Jimmy, I've got to ask you, and thanks for joining us, by the way. You've got quite a brother there, Jimmy.
Yeah, he's one of a kind.
I want to ask you just a few questions, Jimmy. We won't keep you long, but tell us what Danyon was like before these near-death experiences.
Danny was mean. He was a mean little boy. The reason why I'm saying that is that when Danny was coming up, he was small, and but we were real competitive. We would fight all the time. I can remember in church, we'd be sitting there and we would start fighting. Well, we'd start pushing each other and kicking each other. Daddy would carry us out and correct us on the port on the outside, and then we'd come back and we'd sit down inside. I'd be on one side and he'd be on the other. I remember one occasion was really funny. Danny would fight. And we had one of the neighbors, Danny had said something that he didn't like. And when he hit Danny, he broke his nose. And happened to be about 2 days later, we had to go to a funeral. And this man turned around and looked at Danny, and his nose was swollen across his face. And Danny stuck his tongue at him. And it was just, you know, he just carried that. But Danny was small, and then he would be picked on a little bit. And then all of a sudden, he had a growing spurt. And when he grew, he was a pretty good sized boy. In fact, I got to the point where I got tired of trying to beat him. We just
You got too tough.
Well, it was futile. I mean, we would sit there. And we were about equal. But anyway, Danny would go and for some reason it just we both have a real bad temper. It's just that I guess being competitive and just being as we were, I guess, just taught. We were let to be boys.
Well, let's anyway, fast Danny forward.
What was the Ted Scott story?
Well, Ted Scott's an example of what it is Danny, for some reason, when I thought I had a compassion, I'd either avoid it or either I would just, I'd know it when I'd quit. Ted, for some reason, they liked the same girl. So who knows what the reason was. But anyway, Danny got the drop on Ted, and he beat him down until he got under the car. And then when the guy tried to come out, Danny wouldn't let him come out. He would kick at him. And that was the funniest one. The funniest one was we were out at this place we called a lap cap. It was called a snow cap. And Danny, when he went to get out the car, he had to bump this. He opened his door and he had to bump this other guy's car, and the guy jumped out and told Danny, he said, "Dude, what are you getting in my car?" And Danny said, "I didn't get your car. You know, I was telling you." He kept going. Danny said, "If you want to see a dent, I'll show you one." And Danny took his foot and kicked the side of the door.
Jeez.
I mean, just kicked until there was a dent there.
You were a mean guy, Danny. Jimmy, let's
go.
No,
no, no, that's not the thing. No, that wasn't the mean part.
You mean he got worse?
No. The guy said he wanted to fight him. So, Danny, when the boy went to take his jacket off, which you don't ever do, when he got it about halfway down, Danny knew that was the time he could take him. Danny took him. I mean, the boy had his jacket about halfway down. So
he couldn't move his arms.
He could. That's what I mean. If you're gonna fight, you don't want to get dirty. So I mean, he took him down. I mean, that's just the way it was. There's no compassion in that.
What was that night like in September the 17th, brother? I mean, I don't remember if you know that.
Well, okay, you got to think about, you know, there was no cell phones, and things were, you just drive. So what happened was we got a call. That mean we, my parents called me, father called and said, Danny's been struck by lightning, they've carried him to the hospital. I said, well, was it Aiken or Augusta? They said it was Augusta. So I went by and picked up my father. And we were driving over there, and in my mind I was saying, you know, I mean, he was my brother, but I had my father there, his son was there. And I was trying to prepare, we were preparing, you know, I didn't know how, because we had had people struck by lightning, and you know, somebody says, like, they're dead. I mean, I just assumed that we were going. So we were driving, and it happened, it was over the Augusta. We got within two blocks of the hospital. It took us 25 minutes to get to where we were. But when we got two blocks from the hospital, there was a train that was going by. Well, you can't get by when the train was there.
Oh.
We were sitting there for 20 minutes with that train. And so we were just sitting there, you know, waiting, and we finally got across. And then when we got to the hospital, it took us another 20 minutes to find him. I mean, it's if you go back then, you know, he wasn't in the emergency room because they had carried him on to be treated. So when we got in there and we got up there, we were looking, and then Danny was laying in there, and they had him, I don't know what you call it, but anyway, they had him laying in there. They hadn't put him in a bed yet. And we got in there, and,
did he look dead, Jimmy?
Well, I don't know what you'd call dead, but as you would say, he had a little whitish look to him, so, I mean, you know.
Pasty,
but they told he was fine. He died. He's fine, but he was breathing, and they were gonna have, we were going to have to wait to see what kind of damage there was from the
At what point, Jimmy, did you start seeing, because of these near-death experiences, at what point did you start seeing an attitude change with Danion, being from the mean guy, the mean kid, to where he is now?
Well, you can't. It was a progression, because first of all, he was not Danny, the 200-pound, strong as an ox guy. He was laying there at limpet, and he just physically. It took a lot of physical. You would notice, because he was that way because he couldn't do things. You know, he couldn't see. He had to wear glasses, real thick glasses. They had no balance. And then, it really, to tell you the truth, it was over a period of about 4 years. I mean, because 2 years on physical, so you I don't care how bad you are physically, you gain it back, and then you become a little humility takes in because of your incapacity to do as what you wanted to do before.
And Danion, let me ask you this before we hit the break. When did you notice yourself changing?
Well, I noticed it the first year and a half, like Brother is describing. It was hard, George. And I lost 55 pounds from my normal frame, and I struggled. You know, I didn't recognize my mother. Sometimes my brother would come, and I wouldn't know who he was. And I was struggling. And at the same time, I'm living in this alternate reality. And it wasn't, I always try to hope it was a hallucination. But I began to go back through it and go back through it. And I realized that whatever this was, it was truly, it happened. And I kept going back through the panoramic life review and the things. And that had happened, and I began to see a pattern to it, and then I knew I had to change because I couldn't go back and be that person that I was. But my brother was 10th Mountain, so I want to thank him for calling at 3 o'clock in the morning. I want to
thank him. We're going to let him get to bed.
I want to thank him for serving. I love you, brother.
There you go. Danion, any more siblings or just Jimmy?
Well, I have a sister, a younger sister.
Okay.
I mean, she came the next day, but it took me 2 or 3 days. I know the stories, George, and we'll recount that. I mean, but when I listened to my brother, it was some scary times because some of the stuff I can't quite piece together how it occurred, but I ask everybody. You know, we were going to have one other person, but it was just too much to try to get them on the phone who was there that night. But, you know, it's 3 o'clock in South Carolina.
Man.
3:30.
I mean, I guess, how does it hurt? Does it hurt when you get hit by lightning, or are you just...
It's
you
like
know,
bathing
knocked
in
out.
Battery acid. It runs down. It hit me in the side of the head, George, and went down my spine. And that means it went through my entire nervous system, and it went out the bottom of my feet and burnt 2 holes in the bottom of my feet.
Jeez.
And it welded the nails of my heels of my shoes to the floor and threw me in the air. If I hadn't have been grounded, I'd have blown apart. But it was like battery acid. But the coolest thing about it, George, is I went from blind, burning, on fire, paralyzed, in more pain than a human being should have the right to suffer, and I lifted out of my body. And I was watching my body like it was a 3D movie. I was not attached to it anymore. I wasn't in pain. I was comfortable where I was. And then I just began to study. I could see things that were that showed an energy around everything as opposed to just seeing it as separate. I could see connective energy. And I'm really studying it because any place that I was going to go other than in that paralysis was good, because when I finally got back into my body after 28 minutes, who knows how long, George, we just counted what the paramedics said, you know, because when you got me to the hospital, it said patient unconscious, patient not breathing, no EKG. And that's the whole gurney. My dad called it a slab. They covered me with a sheet. And then by the time they got there, I had come out of it, but I didn't know where I was.
Well, Danion, when we come back, I want to talk about what happened to you in 1975 as you were basically shown some special knowledge, and we're going to get into some of the prophecy in a moment. Well, if you're a Coast Insider, we'll have our special chat tomorrow night, okay? It'll be 8 p.m. Pacific time. So jump on board. Those of you who are Coast Insiders will do our special chat. And I'll be back in a moment more with Danion Brinkley on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Danion, what are the boxes of knowledge?
All right, George, let me tell you something. Can I add one more point?
Yeah.
I was listening to my brother, and I have a dad. My dad, like my brother's describing my dad. My dad was the coolest dad that anybody could ever have. And I was doing, back when Saved by the Light came out, because it became a classic. It was either Dateline or 2020 or Inside Edition, and they were sitting, and they'd come to my house in Aiken, and my dad was sitting on the porch, and he's a lot like my brother, you know, that style. He's laid back. He's got a style and observation. And the producer came and said, well, Mr. Brinkley, because she wanted to ask Dad about near-death experiences. And so, because we're from the South, and there's, you know, all that fundamentalist, like everybody goes to hell in the South. And they asked my dad, they said, well, Mr. Brinkley, let me ask you a question. Just think about how my brother is. Let me ask you a question. He said, what do you think about all this near-death experience and the stuff that Danyon has gone through? And my dad looked up, he said, let me tell you something. That near-death experience didn't do Danny very much good, but it did the rest of us a world of good.
Yes.
Because he was noticing the change.
Sure did.
I mean, he was watching that person that was just like that fight that Jimmy described. There was 500 of those.
You had a good upbringing, Danny.
I would knock you out, you know, and take a good beating every so often, but I would knock you out. But here's what happened, George. When I didn't really know anything about a near-death experience, and when I met Raymond, you know, you tell more than when you don't know what you're not supposed to tell. So what happened was I struggled for 2 years moving in and out of dimensions. And when I had this near-death experience, after I had the panoramic life review, met the being of light, which everybody has a lot of names for that being of light, but after 3 times, that being of light that you meet is really you. There is a side of you that never really enters this dimension, and it's most of you. It represents like atoms, molecules, and cells. If you look at a human body, it's made of atoms, molecules, and cells. Let's say there were 320 million people who live in the United States, and if you took all the empty space out of an atom, which is 94.6%, all the empty space out of a molecule of everybody's body, which is 98%, and all the empty space out of everybody's cells in everybody in the 320 million people in America. Once you did all that, the entire population of America would fit in a matchbox. That's science. That's provable, replicable science. Well, that means you're never really here anyway, George. And this is one of the biggest transitional points for me to have to accept that when we're occupying this space because we have this water bag that we're wearing. And, you know, we're just basically a water treatment plant. And that, yeah, but we're really not here because it's all just a bunch of empty space. So having to accept that, you began to understand things. So after I had the panoramic life view, I went to these places that I could only call crystal cities, because you could see that there were many of them, but this seemed to be my home place. And I came into this place that was radiant and wondrous, but there was these 13 beings that appeared, and then there was 12 beings, and then a 13th being to the right, a little higher, as if it was designating what was happening.
And you could clearly see these entities, I guess.
Oh, you could see them radiating. They were multidimensional colors, and they were colors that, we call them auras here, but they would radiate. It would pulse outward. And then this 13th being seemed to control all of this, but these places were built of light, George. And I'm studying them because I can sense power and presence and honor and greatness and, you know, integrity and all those kind of feelings when somebody you look up to, but I didn't know them. So the 13th being would designate a being, and it wasn't just in an order. It would be in wherever, the 5th, 6th, 4th, 3, and that being would radiate. And the only thing I could see was that one being. And then this, what I would now call a computer, I mean like a laptop, it's what I only words that I could describe, would come at me, and then I was in this place. It wasn't like I had been where I was in the energetic pattern of the place that I was. I was literally experiencing this. I realize now that they were giving me future events. I didn't know this till Raymond told me 4 years later. They were giving me probable possibilities of future events so that I would have a stream of consciousness. I believe it was to keep me doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Probably.
Okay, as opposed to anything I was marveling at, because I always call that character Nostradanian, because I just had a good memory about what I saw. And I saw these events. I didn't think any more about it until Raymond called me 4 years later, and he told me that the collapsing of the Soviet Union, and then came Chernobyl, and all these things I had told Raymond about, we had written them down, and all these things that had come about. And so what it was if you people who read Secrets of the Light knew, I had to follow a certain pattern and a certain methodology to get to the year 2014. Okay, and so there was a series, I haven't missed very many. One of the big ones is the chip implant that we're looking at, and everyone's talking about it, that you have to RFID, and then it would be a chip implant. And I saw today that they were putting those in people in churches in Wyoming. And then there was a series of things that have to come about in order for either us to wake up or to sell out. So next year is the most important year that will probably the next year and a half from 2014. It's the most important decision-making period. Well, what I had to have done was to create what I called spiritualistic capitalism, which became complementary and alternative medical policy, which became the Twilight Brigade. That's a complementary and medical policy program into the VA system, because a caregiver is a complementary therapy that can be there to nourish the soul. I got in a big argument with a doctor, and I said, Doc, your job is to keep that body working. Inside of that person is a mental, emotional, and spiritual being, and what the Twilight Brigade does is deal with the mental, emotional, and spiritual being. So I knew that that was the way to establish the next thing that was supposed to happen, was the center program. All this is in Saved by the Light, and I wrote that 20 years ago, but it came from a written series of predictions, which is they became, that I wrote down in 1975 and 76.
That's so what you call the boxes of knowledge?
Yeah, those? The boxes of knowledge. And they, you had to find terms, George. You know, I had to find terms, and I would look at thesauruses and dictionaries to find ways to define these things. Just like Fukushima, I saw fjords, and I never saw that it would be Fukushima that would be the next nuclear accident after Chernobyl until I saw a picture of Fukushima from the ocean. And then I could see why I saw mountains and fjords, and that I thought it would be Norway, but it was really Fukushima. This is going to be a devastating experience. We're going to have to take a look at our health. We're going to have to take a look at our health care. 1975, I said the battle for the souls of humankind would be fought in health care. Guess where we are? So as this all unfolded, there had to be a program that became what I always call the center program. It's chapter 5, the last two pages of Saved by the Light. At Peace in the Light was my strategy. I wrote that in 95. This was how I was going to execute to pull off what I believe I was sent back to do. And so for me, it's just to keep moving forward. But everybody needs to realize that next year, I mean, is the tipping point. And I was laughing the other day because, you know, I've studied the Maya longer than I've studied death.
That's true. You have.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm a pre-classic Mayan freak. Okay, so from the 13th Bakhtun, you know, the whole thing about December the 21st, 2012, and people say, well, how come it's the end of time? And if it was the end of time, how come the Mayans didn't say anything else about it, and so it was the end of time? The only thing they never put into consideration, George, is the Spanish came and burned everything. See, what happened to the Mayans' future? They burned it. But December the 21st, 2012, marked, according to the Mayans, a 400-day period between the end of one period, one cycle, 5,125 years, broken down into 52 and 125 years, to what's now called a universal. But listen how funny this is. The galactic period said all things done in integrity would collapse. That's the period we just finished. Look what happened. Our governments, our religions, our institutions. You trust your bank, you trust your doctor, you trust your church. Who do you trust? It's like
nobody. Nobody trusts anybody anymore.
Everything's a conspiracy. It's like you were saying in your ad earlier. You have to be suspect, and you have to. But watch what it says about the what's coming called the universal period, which starts January the 26th, 2014. It says there will be no secrets. Now this is 3,000 years. The Mayan calendar. The one thing that supports Graham Hancock, when you look at George at Graham Hancock, that there had to be a universal center of where we all began. Every calendar, the Chinese calendar, Hebrew calendar, Aztec calendar, Mayan calendar, much of the North African survivors of what we call the Moors calendar, all of these calendars, the Chinese calendar, all these calendars started between 3,104 and 3,114. Only 10 years separates every known calendar, Egyptian, Chinese, Aztec, Mayan. So there has to be a commonality in that. But the Mayan knew from their astrophysics, their spiritual cycles that they operated by, their belief of where they came from, which they think they came from Venus, where they came from, that the new period would come, would be called the universal period, and there'd be no secrets. Well, look at what NASA and look at what Homeland Security and what Snowden has brought out. So it just shows that the Mayans know what they're doing. So this is here are a few of the things I have not seen come. World War II, and we're moving toward that. That was in the Middle East.
You mean three?
The Vatican establishing a presence in Israel. You know, if you are the Pope, you have to come under your passport. You don't have any special privileges. The Israelis do not recognize the Vatican as a political or a represented country, okay? And then where we are, our economic collapse and the rise of chemical weapons in the Middle East. Now, this stuff is 1975. Even Iranians having submarines now. I wrote all this crap down in 1975, and Raymond started telling people. It wasn't me, George. So we're going to come to a head. You know, and here it comes, and we have to make decisions about what we trust and what we believe in. And what I believe in is doing some kind of service work, you know, hospice or Meals on Wheels.
Well, you are.
Excuse me?
I said you are doing your service work.
Well, and I agree that everybody should, because it gets them to connect with people. It gets them to identify. We live on the computer. We watch television. We don't exercise. We alienate and we cocoon. But this is what's got to change. And you know what? What's happening, George, among everybody is that spiritual awakening. You hear it on your shows. You hear it what people write in. Because we will win this, and this is the critical time.
Daniel, do you call yourself, do you consider yourself a prophet?
No.
Not at all.
I got to be that, George. I mean, people, you know, I see that stuff on the internet. I know too much about me to think I'm way too important, and I don't read my press because. But what happened was I saw the probable possibilities of the future, and I wrote those down because I didn't know. I'd never heard of a near-death experience. It didn't have a name when it happened to me. It was like over a year and a half before I ever met Raymond, and I had to stay occupied. I had to keep in my mind off of the kind of pain that I was in. But this was a plan. I figured this and laid this plan because I had a 38-year journey. How do you like to know that you would have to have these things in place and you'd be 38 years because it was when those beings decided when it was going to be executed? And see, that's like the truth, George. I mean, I'm very pragmatic. I watch what I'm doing and I pay attention, and by creating a way that veterans who are going from this world to the next, and it's the Twilight Brigade, that means that there are veterans who would get trapped in that third book, in the third book called The Secrets of the Light. I write about this place that I discovered, and I called it the Blue Gray Place the first two times, but the third time, 1997, doing brain surgery when I didn't make it, 10% chance of surviving.
Mm.
And then I came out of that, spent 41 hours in recovery after the brain surgery. and had a massive grand mal seizure and got put in a neurocardiac ward on life support.
Oh, you mean just right after that? Oh,
massive grand mal seizure. I ripped the bags, all these bags, because my brains were draining out of the side of my head. And it was Art who took the picture. And I tore the bags out of my head, and blood was gushing everywhere because I was going to get up and leave there because I could tell with a grand mal seizure, those are hallucinations. And after three near-death experiences, I could tell the difference between what was a real near-death experience and what was a hallucination. And I was leaving, and they had to grab me, tie me down, you know, just being that guy I was, and sew these bags back to the side of my head. And so when you go through that kind of stuff, knowing I'm going to be over there a lot longer than I'm going to be over here. If it took me 38 years, if it took me 1,000, I'm going to make it happen.
So as you look into your crystal ball for the future and the things that you've seen, the possibilities of a World War III, you saw Fukushima and things like that. Are you concerned about the next 5-10 years of this planet?
I'm concerned about the next two.
You're not giving us much time here, Dan.
Yeah, but you know what? We've had, they gave me a time frame, George. I believe in us. We are great, powerful, and mighty spiritual beings. We have dignity, direction, and purpose. How did the world get so screwed up, and how did we get so crazy? We allowed something to affect our identity. When I wrote this stuff down in 1975, George, I said there would be the formulation of an environmental religion, because I had no other framework to put it in. Okay, now we are called climate change is what it's evolved into, that the churches have come back. And when I wrote it and I was telling it to a minister, he said that could never happen because that means we would be returning to paganism. Well, guess what? The President of the United States is now preparing through FEMA to prepare for global warming. And now it's churches organizing, and now what we now call global warming as a worldwide event, whether it's true or not, is still the evolution of an environmental religion. Now we have to watch to see how the Vatican positions itself during the Palestinian issue, the Syrian issue, the Iranian issue, and the Iraqi issue. We have to see how the Vatican positions itself to make its presence accepted in Israel. That's a big, important point in to determine which way we'll go as a nation.
Let me ask you this, Daniel. Why do we have to go through near-death experiences like you did in order to change for the better? Why can't we just do it now?
Well, I think that the divine, George, believes in us. I mean, look, I got up from the dead and went after being a hospice volunteer for 36 years, spent 28 years in the VA, and created the Twilight Brigade, so that I could weave a certain amount of consciousness of service and caregiving into a place that changes people's compassionate viewpoint of war, because it has to stop, and to create a way that people could embrace what was called, what I call transition, but they were calling death, and in the course of service, find their own spiritual identity because they lose fear. We have to do whatever it takes to lose fear. Terrorism plays an important part. I think a lot of that is manufactured because I could see the possible events that was being created within it. But we don't have to go through it. People have to accept to look at their spiritual self. You know, you're a spiritual being. You were here. Do you remember Ruth Montgomery?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she was. Well, hold on. We're already at the break, Daniel. We'll come back next hour. Plus, we'll take some more phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM.